from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's Thursday on the Brad Sesmatch Show on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports. My name is Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad today, joined by the man, the myth, the Espo, Greg Esposito.
Which one of us is Brad and which one of us is Sesmatch today? Because I feel like when there's two of us, we have to separate it, and one of us has to be one and the other has to be the other.
Well, when I think of a Brad, I think of a guy with a nice full beard. So
really?
You can be the Brad and I'll be the Sesmatch.
So the hairline goes with the Sesmatch.
And you have a much better hairline than I do. There's no question about it.
I gotta get that joke in once every time we do it.
Please do. You know that it's going. You know that it's going fast.
It's not as bad as E's though, so don't worry about it.
E, you have a comment on that early in the show?
I'm going dark, I told you that.
You're just going dark today. He's going dark. That's Eric Sorensen, Jared Nielsen, Greg Esposito, Jared Cohen. We're holding it down for the Brad Sesmatch Show today. Lot to talk about on the show. We're going to be joined by Lincoln Kennedy coming up in about 20 minutes. Cardinals Raiders. He is the Raiders radio broadcast analyst. He'll be on the show. He also does work coming up this season with the Pac-12. It'll be great to visit with Lincoln on the show. But first, let's get into what's going on in the world of sports, brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Stop into Santan Ford for their great variety and selection on new or certified pre-owned vehicles just off the 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Espo, it's been a while since we've done the show together. So there's always great local back and forth because you and I, born and raised here in this great state of Arizona.
I wasn't born here, but we'll go with
you. You weren't born here?
No, I wasn't. But I've been here long enough, 30 years, so we can roll.
Well, that's a vast majority of your life. So let's just say that you're a native for the sake of my argument here. You have a great understanding for the depth and the tradition and the history of just about every sports team in town. Let's start off with the Cardinals. A lot of hype around this team. Nationally, not quite as much. I feel like if you jump out of the state of Arizona, people aren't mentioning the Cardinals in the same breath as an NFC contender as frequently as it is heard here around different media outlets and people that are around the team and even the fans. So I'm curious, as we're going into the third preseason game coming up this weekend against the Raiders in front of a national audience, it's a NBC broadcast. What are things that are standing out? What are some negatives? What are some things that are catching your eye?
Well, I think the national perspective is probably skewed because the few times the real national stage was on the Cardinals, they didn't have Carson Palmer last year. And the last one, Ryan Lindley was behind center, and we all know how that game went. So I think that's probably why some of the expectations nationally are kind of tempered for this team. I've been very, very impressed with Carson Palmer. He has looked tremendous this preseason. Everything you hear is that he looks fantastic in practice as well. If he can stay healthy, and that's the big if he can stay healthy, this team, those expectations are warranted from the local fan base. Really liked what I saw there. J.J. Nelson, everybody's talking about him. You know, the Fire is his nickname out there.
Smoke and Fire. Johnny.
I like what he's been able to do out there. The running game is a big question mark. They brought in Chris Johnson because obviously Coach Arians wasn't happy with what he was getting out of those running backs. Chris Johnson gets hurt. I don't know what that running back position is going to be able to give you, and that's going to be a very big key. And the other key is, how well do they block for Carson Palmer, too? Because you got guys back there in Andre Ellington that can catch the ball, Chris Johnson that can do some of that. How's the blocking? How's the protection? Because if Carson Palmer goes down, I love Stanton, but
it's not going to happen.
Carson Palmer is the key, and he needs that running game to take off some of the pressure, too.
Let's do an impromptu, all-time bests of old guys that have resurrected their career in this city. I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, Kurt Warner's number one.
Yes.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Kurt Warner came in here. He was done. He wasn't even supposed to be the starting quarterback at all. That was Matt Leinart's job, and Kurt Warner was supposed to stand in here and hold the clipboard. We were never supposed to see the gloved one on the field. He went out there. He resurrected his career. He changed what the entire perception of him as a football player was. He was a cutesy story about, he was a grocery bagger who went and had success a few times with the Rams. Well, now he's a legitimate Hall of Fame conversation there. So he's number one on that list. You could make an argument that Grant Hill's number two on that list. He was done for. He was injury.
The veteran minimum.
Yeah. He came in. The training staff, Aaron Nelson and that group with the Suns, worked miracles with him. Steve Nash is even on that list. He was supposedly done with the back injury. But Carson Palmer is in that discussion. I mean, he was retired. He literally was out of the game, came back, and I think he's 15-2 in his last 17 starts with the team. I think that's the stat.
It's close to that.
It's impressive, whatever it is in his last handful of starts. If he stays healthy, the Cardinals have a legitimate quarterback for the first time since Kurt Warner, and probably for only the third time since they've been here in Phoenix, because I don't really count Neil Lomax that first season.
You don't?
And then you've got Jake Plummer, Kurt Warner, and now Carson Palmer.
No question
about
it.
Which speaks to how awful that quarterback situation's been. But talking about quarterbacks, I think one of the other bright spots for me, and it's bizarre because you wouldn't think it'd be, but Philip Sims, the fourth string quarterback, really intrigues me. And this is a guy that can't see. We've heard that story, you know, how he has eye issues and didn't get the surgery because it was going to postpone him actually taking part in this training camp. He's impressed me. I think he's the third string quarterback.
He's been better than Logan. There's no question.
And I think I read Aaron's playing him in the third quarter this week. Really, this is his chance to shine. He's going to get a chance to really prove it, and I'm excited to see what this guy can do. I'm rooting for him because Logan Thomas, and I hate to write any guy off in his second season, but he had his chance last year. He could have started a playoff game, wasn't ready. He's had opportunities this preseason. He's looked all right, but I'm really intrigued by Philip Sims.
I watched him at the end of that Chargers game last week, and he played really well at the end of the Chiefs game as well. Had some scoring drives. Definitely Philip Sims has been an interesting story this camp. Let's switch gears now to Arizona State, as that's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad today. So Arizona State pops up today, and for much better news than had been at the start of the week with everything that had gone on with Bo Graham, the son of Todd Graham, resigning from the program. Kirk Herbstreit goes out and gives his Herbies on Twitter.
Which sounds like something you catch on a college campus.
Which sounds more like a sexually transmitted...
I wasn't going to go... I was leaving it to the imagination.
Well, I went there. So college Herbies are going around before the start of the football season. He gives his top four for the college football playoff. He goes out on a limb. He says Ohio State, LSU a little bit of a surprise, Oklahoma, and Arizona State. Now, ASU flirted with the top four last season after their win over Notre Dame, before their loss to Oregon State. They were in the top 10 at the end of the season after the bowl games all occurred in the championship, like the final college football playoff standings. They were in the top 10. But this is a program that people nationally are saying can be a contender along with USC, UCLA, and the defending Pac-12 South champions, Arizona. And people are so far putting them into the mix of being a college football playoff team. And Herbstreit, a very well-respected guy in the industry, has him right there.
Yeah, but he also put hashtag out on a limb. He realizes that this is kind of a ludicrous list, at least for in terms of ASU sneaking in there. I think their chances are about as good as U of A's chances last year, where they're likely going to have to win a big Pac-12 title game to get in, and I don't think they're going to do it. I think they'll be a very good team. I think it'll be a top 10 team probably when it's all said and done, but I don't see them getting in the playoff. And they're one of their toughest games is right out the gate in Houston next week. They can't falter in that, because that sets the tone. If they come out, they play really well, maybe they can get that momentum. But the Pac-12 is not a cakewalk. This is not an easy conference to play in. You can expect one, maybe two losses just in your conference. So if you come out the gates and you lose that opening game in Houston against Texas A&M, you've really put yourself behind the eight ball. As dumb as it sounds to say, could wind up being the key to the season is winning that neutral site game in week one.
That isn't even a conference game. I'm glad you brought that game up, because I wanted to touch on this before we shift gears into talking to Lincoln Kennedy next segment. There is so much riding on this game. So much. And those who say, oh, it's just a non-conference game, there's still plenty of season left, there is so much that goes into this. Texas A&M has owned everyone in getting the top prospects in Arizona, and they are about to do it again as a couple of the top prospects for this 2016 class here in Arizona have official visits lined up with Texas A&M and are listed in their top five. They have owned them the last 3 years from a recruiting standpoint. They have come into the Arizona State's backyard, and they've taken all the best players, two of which Arizona State basically finished second with Christian Kirk and Kyle Allen from what I've heard behind the scenes. So there is an unbelievable leverage situation for Todd Graham to say, go ahead, take our best players. We're still the better football team at the end of the day. There is that. There is the college football playoff implications, getting a big win early in the season. There is so much on this game that I think, you know, if you talk to them, they would temper the expectations a little bit. But it's a very fascinating storyline with the from the recruiting standpoint. We got to call it quits here for this segment. Got Lincoln Kennedy coming up next. Talk a little bit Raiders, Cardinals preseason, plus a little Pac-12 football. That's Greg Esposito. I almost said Lincoln Kennedy. That's Lincoln Kennedy. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad today on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
It's the Brad Sesmatch Show on a Thursday morning. Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito filling in for Brad today. Going to be joined by Lincoln Kennedy here shortly to talk a little Cardinals-Raiders preseason game number three. Before we get to Lincoln, Greg, there's the big question, and we'll ask Lincoln about it. The controversy of players getting injured, is the preseason too long? This has been kind of a topic we've been mentioning for 3, 4, 5 years now, and it's come and hit everyone, kicked everyone between the legs once again with some of the injuries that some of these teams had. The Cardinals have had that happen to them. The Packers with Jordy Nelson. At what point do you see there being a change, if ever, to kind of help with the safety, to help kind of preserve the top profile players just making it to the regular season?
I'm not sure that there is much of a change you can make. Football is such a physical sport. They've already cut down on the number of contact practices that you can have. You look at these major injuries, they're in week two. Some of them have come in week one and week two of the preseason. We're not talking about week three, week four. They were considering, you know, people say make it a two-game preseason. Well, people are getting injured in that too. I think this is a byproduct of how big these players are getting, how fast they are, and I don't think you're going to be able to limit the kind of injuries, because at some point the human body probably isn't meant to take the beating that they do on a regular basis, or have the muscle mass, the kind of the different factors. I don't think you're going to be able to really mitigate that. It could make them not get these injuries. I think it's just going to continue to happen, and it's a byproduct of the sport.
You mentioned the limiting of the contact that was negotiated in the most recent CBA. And I think that there's something to that that's all of a sudden becoming a detriment to the players, where they thought initially it was going to help them, help preserve them, be good for safety. I think these guys, because of the limit and how limited they are in dealing with the strength and conditioning guys on campus or for the players, for the teams, that they're not ready and they're having these injuries. I think there's something to that.
I agree. My medical degree, I don't have
you've
that.
Got a,
I'll
you've
just
got
agree.
You've got a fine medical degree. Let's ask Lincoln Kennedy about this topic. Lincoln Kennedy, he's the sideline reporter for the Oakland Raiders and also Pac-12 network analyst. Lincoln, how you doing today, man?
Wonderful, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So we were talking about how this becomes kind of an old topic, but it's still a prevalent one. The injuries in the preseason, and is there a link there between the players negotiating the CBA for limiting the contact practices and the number of practices, and could there be a correlation there to these guys just not being ready this time of year, leading to some of these non-contact injuries like we've seen here locally with Corey Peters and nationally with Jordy Nelson?
Well, I mean, I think there's some truth to all of it. I will say this. I noticed a change when I was playing that there were more, you know, with companies like, you know, the shoe companies trying to make lighter, faster, easier gear, all that stuff. I think that has some correlation with the number of Achilles injuries. To your point, I've always believed that there's a certain level of callus that you have to build up with contact sports. And the only way that you can do that is to go through contact. It's almost like a necessary evil. No one liked a training camp. No one ever liked training camp. But it was also part of sort of a necessary evil if you were to get yourself in shape and get yourself ready for the rigors of the season. Now, with that being said, in my estimation of where we are today is the fact that you know, no matter how hard you try, PX90 training is never going to get you ready for football. and that's what guys are doing in the offseason. They might be running faster and doing more, you know, athletic type of moves, but it's not football-related moves. And so when you put the pads on and tell your body that you want to go against somebody who's of equal size and strength, and you needed to do it in that burst, you're putting a lot of strain on your muscles, and I think that's why you have a lot of fat guys with soft tissue injuries, if you know what I mean.
Has these injuries kind of diminished the how meaningful that third preseason game is for a lot of teams now because they want to try to prevent those injuries from happening?
Well, but you still have to get evaluation. The only thing that you, because you cannot generate the speed, the game time speed in practice. You got to evaluate where guys are. The only way you could do that is to play football. I know why the CBA, why the players did what they did. I mean, if you own a company, you go to your workers and say, okay, by a show of hands, who wants to work hard every day versus every other day or every third day? I'm sure you're going to have people choose the latter. The inmates can't run the asylum, but I also think it's twofold. I think the NFL really didn't mind having this rule change in and putting it in place because, let's face it, fantasy is a big part of what guys are doing these days, or what teams are doing these days in the NFL. And fantasy numbers, you want your guy to be healthy in week one as much as you want him in week 17. The way to do that is limit the amount of contact, limit the amount of practices, limit the amount of strain so they're ready for you on game day.
At what point does the business, though, these seem like a lot of business decisions, but at what point does that affect the sport negatively?
Well, I think what you're going to end up having is you're going to end up having the NFL, like they've already done to some extent. They've extended the practice squad roster from 4 to 10 this year. You're going to have more teams adding more players. We're going to end up having about 75 guys eventually on the active roster just to try to curtail that area if a case of injuries happen.
Lincoln Kennedy, the Oakland Raiders sideline analyst and Pac-12 network analyst, joining us here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. You mentioned fantasy sports. Let's talk about the last two first-round picks of the Oakland Raiders. David Carr, Amari Cooper. How are these guys looking? Is this going to be the future dynamic duo in the AFC West?
Well, I think when you talk about football, especially the future is now. So you really don't have a window to develop. These guys have to come in ready to play. With that being said, Derek Carr took his lumps, as he should, being a high-profile franchise-style quarterback for the Raiders last year. I expect him to be better. And now that they've been able to put some weapons around him, like Amari Cooper, I think the Raiders offensively are going to have a solid foundation. That with the addition of Michael Crabtree, and then we'll see what Trent Richardson can hang out with Latavius Murray in the backfield. They should have a number of playmakers. It's just a matter of how Bill Musgrave calls this offensive game plan to see how much balance we can have out of this attack.
You talked about the current Raiders quarterback, but let's look at a previous Raiders quarterback in Carson Palmer. When you saw what he did in Oakland, would you ever imagine the success he's been able to have here in Arizona pre the injury?
I've always believed Carson Palmer was a quarterback that can make any throw on the field, and he's had a wonderful career. He's still trying to find a home and still trying to find that elusive championship that every player chases. But with that being said, what's impressed me most about Carson is his resiliency, and especially injuring the same knee like he did last year. Coming back at the age he is, he's still trying to press it. I really think the Cardinals are in a good position. If they're able to create enough balance to where you're not putting a lot of pressure on Carson to make those throws, which Coach Arians, I think, will do, I think this is going to be a really good team, especially in the NFC West.
A big offseason situation, Lincoln, that involves both the Raiders and the Cardinals was the decision of Dan Williams to take a nice contract offer from the Raiders and go to Oakland. The Cardinals, in turn, signed Corey Peters, who we mentioned at the top, who ultimately tears his ACL he tore his Achilles just before the start of his three-year contract. But for Dan Williams, big opportunity for him. How has he looked in camp, and how is he going to be a big piece for them going forward?
Very impressive. One of the things that has to happen for professional football players these days is you got to have guys who can stop the run up the middle. You see a lot of shotgun and gun runs, and that and for guys to be able to stop that, that's what's essential for teams to have success. I think Dan Williams is going to be a great asset for the Raiders.
Lincoln, let's switch gears a little bit to a little bit of Pac-12 football because you wear the Pac-12 network analyst hat as well, one of your many jobs. Steve Sarkisian in the news for the wrong reasons. Different things have come out based on his situation with alcohol, that he'll keep a beer in the locker room and things like that. Everything going around USC, from your perspective, this can't be good, but maybe it's not as big of a distraction as we might think. What's your overall thoughts on what's going on in L.A.?
Well, because my son is going there, it's something that hit close to home. He's concerned about it, as he should be. You know, USC is like is very unique. It's one of those big branded programs that doesn't have the luxury or can't ill afford to have the luxury of making mistakes or being in the news in the wrong way. They're there to win, and you're there to win now. And you're there to win from the sense of a national championship perspective, not just going through the motions. So with that being said, it's a reason for concern. It's a reason of concern. And it's most importantly for Sark, it's a reason he's got to get corrected. He's there to win football games, to win national championships. It's not 8-6 and stuff like that isn't good for USC. So it's an area for concern. But I think, you know, knowing Sark the way I do, he'll get it handled and he'll get it rectified. He's just under a big microscope right now.
ASU here in Tempe has a big game heading to Houston, takes on Texas A&M in week one. How important is it for this program to get off to the fast start against Texas A&M?
Well, you know what? The way things are going these days, guys, is it seems more and more that people are telling me that a 10-2 season is a failure.
That's right.
And so Todd Graham has one of those teams, to me, that is certainly able to challenge for a national championship, if not for a Pac-12 championship, and all that. And I really think that Todd's going to be good, but he's got to get off to a fast start. And you cannot afford to drop one against the A&M, as you said.
Lincoln, one more for you before we let you go. You look at this Pac-12, and there are some people that think that it is so stacked that it's going to beat up on each other to the point where there's not going to be a Pac-12 team represented in the college football playoff by season's end. Do you see that correlating, and do you think that it would be a crime if one of these teams were left out just because they might have a loss or two more than other teams that are in the picture?
You know, you've got five teams in the Pac-12 South that had 9 wins or more last year. And I really think that it's imperious. It's going to happen that these teams are going to beat up on each other. It's bound to happen. With that being said, what you end up having is you have to consider the strength of schedule. You have to consider what the Pac-12 South is going through. And more importantly, you got to consider that maybe a 1-2 loss team might be just as good as anyone in the country. Now, I think you can have the comparisons and conversation with the SEC West. And talking about strength of schedule and people that are going to play. So I think I'm hoping that when it's all said and done, the playoff people, the playoff board committee that votes for the playoff teams will consider that.
Lincoln, thank you so much for your time as always. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch up soon as football's in full motion.
Hey, guys, be well. Thanks for having me.
That's Lincoln Kennedy, Oakland Raiders sideline analyst, Pac-12 network analyst, and just overall great guy joining us here on the show. A lot of interesting stuff from the NFL down through the college ranks, and hopefully we'll talk to Lincoln much more throughout the football season. He's doing a lot of great things. Coming up next, so Steve Nash, someone that you know quite a bit about, I know quite a bit, and hopefully you at home knows quite a bit about, being inducted, it was announced, into the Ring of Honor at the start of the Sun season. We're going to dive into some things involving Steve Nash and other things that correlate superstars that have been in here and in Arizona locally over the course of, you know, time. We've got something to that. So make sure you stick with us. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad today on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. It's the Brad Sesmat Show. Greg Esposito, I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad on the show today, and we're diving into a topic that's very exciting, first and foremost. Steve Nash going into the Ring of Honor very shortly after he announces his retirement, October 30th, and it should be one of the most exciting events outside of a playoff game that we've seen at U.S. Airways Center in quite some time, because the love that his community had for him during the heyday of his era with the Suns was unmatched. I mean, I mean, you think about where the Cardinals are at right now in popularity, and I would still say that the popularity that the Suns had at that stretch, that Cardinals popularity right now wouldn't touch that. Because it was unbelievable. Regular season games during the NBA season can be monotonous and can drag out. Not when Steve Nash was there. Every game was pretty much must-see TV, and it was a lot of fun. Before we dive into the meat of what we're going to discuss here, Greg, I'd like a memory that stands out, a moment that stands out. It could be a well-known one, could be off the court, behind the scenes, or could be one that people just don't think about in terms of your memories of Steve Nash.
Well, two things come to mind, and they're probably one definitely nobody thinks of because it was a personal moment. The other one I don't think most people default to, but I get a chance actually in my first season with the team to travel to L.A. for a game and wound up actually going to a premiere of Grant Hill's documentary that he did on Duke. Most random thing, I wound up in the car with Steve Nash. I probably shouldn't have been there. I probably shouldn't admit I was there, but I wound up at this, and it was really human moment. We were at this reception beforehand. People just kept coming up to him. He's very nice. 20 minutes of shaking hands, signing autographs, taking photos, and I could tell he was kind of wearing down, so I kind of just pulled him aside and just pretended we were talking so he could have a moment to breathe. And it was one of those, you really realize how human a guy is. He's so kind to me and everything. That was kind of my welcome to the NBA moment. But on the court was probably his very last game in a Suns uniform and the "We Want Steve" chant, because that was a coming of age moment for the Phoenix fan base. It was one of those, nobody had to prompt them. Nobody had to tell them this was an important moment. They realized it on their own and started what amounted to, I think, a full 5 minutes of "We Want Steve," because he was out of the game in the
fourth quarter.
Game was
well out of reach, yep.
And he was already iced. He was pretty much done. And they decided it was the right time to start that chant, and it still to this day gives me chills and is emotional. And I feel honored to have been in that building working that game, because it really was a truly amazing Arizona sports moment from a fan's perspective.
I had two. That was one of them. Thank you for stealing that. I too had the privilege of being in the building working that game. Back then, we were able to shoot the games with our cameras on the baseline. The rules have changed a little bit over the last year or so. But I remember being on the floor when that chant started, and it actually started right behind me. I was sitting off by the opposing team's bench, and a few guys behind me were the ones that initially started it. And as it started to percolate and it started to pick up some steam, you just couldn't help but have chills down your spine literally the entire time. And then when Gentry, who, as classy as they come, points to Steve, brings him out onto the floor for that last moment. I think he turned the ball over in that one moment that he had when they brought him back on the court. He had the ball and he ended up having a turnover, and then they took him back out again to get his ovation. That moment was unspeakable.
Well, and the craziest thing too is people forget it went through a timeout. They went to a television timeout and a break, and the chant continued through.
It was incredible. Another one I have, and we had this discussion, Steve didn't really have that on-court moment as many of those on-court moments, like a big game winner or a big shot or something like that, as like you've seen the Jordans or even the Barclays with the David Robinson shot. Mm-hmm. He was just more of a product of, he was unbelievable, and what you were seeing and what he was doing was amazing. So there aren't really those standout moments per se, but I'll never forget Jason Kidd in New Jersey against Steve Nash, triple overtime regular season game. This was one of the best regular season games that I've ever watched. Happened to watch it start to finish. I was in college at the time, and I had a bunch of friends in my room, and we just happened to be watching that game all together that same night. And it was unbelievable, the back and forth, the high intensity, the New York, New Jersey lights, and the shots that Steve was putting up in that game and hitting the ultimate game winner, kind of that floating three-pointer that went in the triple overtime. It was as exciting as it gets. And that game, it reminds me of all the times I had with friends and with family watching that era of Suns basketball, because it was just amazing. It brought people together. It's going to take a lot for any team in this town to reach what Steve's Suns was able to accomplish from a community standpoint, because everyone was dialed in. It didn't matter who you are, how much of a fan you are. It was incredible.
Well, and people can say whatever they want, but this is still a Suns town. When things are rolling as well as they were in those days, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like how emotionally charged it is, because it is Phoenix's first franchise, so you're so emotionally connected to it that it just means so much. And that game that you're talking about featured two of the top three assist leaders of all time in the NBA.
And two former teammates on it as well.
Yeah, amazing duel. I remember that game.
You could only imagine what practices looked like if the games was ultimately going to be like that between those two.
Exactly.
It would have been fun to be a fly on the wall in those days. Let's dive into kind of switch gears here, though, to talk a little bit more grand scheme Arizona sports. So there's the notion here that there's a lot of great stars that have been here but have never been able to win a title, minus the Diamondbacks and the Randy Johnsons and the Luis Gonzalez. But with the Suns and the Cardinals and even the Coyotes, who've had a few stints in the playoffs, the question is posed, are the stars here in town kind of too nice? And because they're too nice, and because the surroundings of the teams are maybe too nice, the fans are kind of, you know, bandwagon, as you could say. Is that the reason why a lot of these teams have just never been able to get over the hump?
Well, look, you've got Luis Gonzalez, genuinely nice guy. Kurt Warner, nice guy. Shane Doan, nice guy. You go Kevin Johnson. You go down the list, Steve Nash. A lot of nice guys, and as the old Green Day song is, nice guys finish last, tends to be what happens. I have a theory, because this city is in love with the nice guy. They don't want the bad guy. They don't want the bad boy or these issues. I think it all stems from Jerry Colangelo set the tone very early on in his time, when this in the formative years of Arizona sports, that you weren't going to put up with a guy that was that kind of player, that was that kind of attitude, that, you know, or issue, or had an edge. It was, we're going to bring in the nice guy, the community guy. And I think it almost conditioned this sports town to want that, to long for that, to expect that. And in the end, I think it does hurt you somewhat, because sports, it doesn't, you're not getting any extra points for being a good guy usually. It's about having an edge, going out there, trying to dominate your competition and really beat them into submission at times. That's what it takes to win a championship. And sometimes, and I can speak to it, because in my illustrious high school football career that lasted all of seven games at Seton Catholic in Chandler, I was pulled aside by a coach and told, quite frankly, straight in my face, you're too nice of a guy to play this game. And you know what? They were right. I wasn't going to win any championships for anybody, because I didn't have the edge to do it.
And they've won championships since you've been on that campus. So there could be something to that.
Really, I'm the key to their success in moving up, in leaving the football program. But really, you can't sometimes be a nice guy. You need to have a extreme competitive edge, that desire to just go out there and dominate your competition. And I think that there's something to this, that the nice guys that we've had maybe didn't have that edge. Kurt Warner in that Super Bowl went up against Ben Roethlisberger, not a nice guy. A Steelers franchise not known as being nice guys.
Yeah.
Larry Fitzgerald is another guy that was his wingman in that Super Bowl run. Really nice guy.
Class act.
Like, maybe you need that bad boy, that edge to kind of do it. You know, let's look at the Mercury, probably one of the most successful franchises in the Valley. Diana Taurasi has that edge. Nice person. I'm not saying she's not a nice person, but she's got that edge. She's got that mean streak. She's going to talk trash. She's going to go right at you. Like, you need that edge to win in sports.
And the one team that might have had that edge could have been the Diamondbacks, when you look at the Randy Johnson, who was incredible. You know, Curt Schilling
yeah,
kind of controversial, not necessarily the nice guy. Those were the kind of the catalyst guys that led to the title, and that's probably the closest that you can find to a team here locally that had those guys, and they actually did win a title.
Well, and you look at these teams that are quote-unquote the rivals, the Spurs. You know, that's one that automatically comes to mind. Not a lot of, you know, nobody's going, oh, they're really, really nice guys. Tim Duncan sometimes comes off like that, but nobody's going, hey, Greg Popovich is the kind of guy that I, you know, X, Y, and Z. Like, no, Robert Horry is the kind of guy that you love to hate, because there's something inherently kind of mean about him. Mm-hmm. That's why you hate him so much as an Arizona sports fan, and part of why he's successful. The Lakers and Kobe Bryant. There's not another guy that makes your blood boil more than Kobe Bryant, and yet He's got the rings. Jordan was the same way.
Every team that Jordan put down during that stretch hated Jordan.
Well, and go listen to his Hall of Fame speech. Yeah. There's nothing nice about that.
No.
The Cowboys back in the day that Cardinals fans hated, that they envied.
Michael Irvin.
They were guys that were going to come in and show you up. They didn't care. They didn't need to be nice. They didn't need to help pick you up off the field. It's these teams, the Celtics that beat the Suns in 76, another group of guys that nobody's talking about how nice they were, how nice their fans were. No, there's an edge to these people. And I think Arizona sports has always been kind of that nice guy that you hang out with. Oh, it's cool. Hey, we got the Elliott Perrys of the world. We've got, you know, all these nice guys. In the end, I'd much rather be hated than have a bunch of nice guys. I'd much rather be the team that the entire league just gets angry when you come into their town, that they want to boo you rather than being everybody's second favorite team because it's fun to watch. At some point, shed it. Let's be the bad guys, because that seems to be what wins. And, you know, it's a lot of us, you can understand, you were a nice guy in school.
I was
a nice guy. At some point, the bad boy wins. You know, sometimes you got to be a little edgy and you got
to
be
that guy.
I had to
come off the bench in high school, too. Maybe if I was meaner. And
I was talking with the girls.
Age,
I wasn't talking about sports. But
that could have been why, too.
Yeah, why not having to be a little bit of a jerk at sometimes?
At times, yeah. Well, so what? What do the teams around here need? Like, how do you? You can't go out and sign the bad guys.
Why not?
So you want? I mean, it's in the world of Twitter, which you are as much of an expert as there is that I know personally. The world of Twitter, teams even outwardly are avoiding the guys that are controversial.
Hire the guy that's had some legal trouble.
No,
and bring
that's
him
not
in.
What I'm saying. But even controversy is a problem. You know, even controversy, you know, I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head, but even guys that have been controversial seem to be the ones that are the guys that teams are avoiding. You know, James Harrison, you know, he's been bouncing around teams at the end of his career. You don't see teams trying to swoop him up. Yeah, he's older and he's at the back end of his career, but he's not on a team right now.
I want the edge on the court, on the field, the guy that is the bad boy in sport. Like Robert Horry, everything I've ever read, it's not that he's a horrible person off the court. He just was going to do things that were going to get under your skin, you know, on the court. He was going to do those kind of things that, you know, yeah, maybe they were slightly dirty. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, but they did the little things that got the job done, that they were going to just do whatever it took to win. That's the kind of mentality you look for.
The perfect example that I could tie to this, and it was the best 30 for 30, or one of the best that I saw, was on the Bad Boy Pistons.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bad Boy Pistons epitomize, you know, being jerks on the court. They ended up winning a title. Michael Jordan didn't become Michael Jordan, the one that we knew and the one that became the six-time champion, until he had to deal with the Bad Boy Pistons in the playoffs. Because they showed and interviewed him about it, that he just realized that he just was not tough enough to handle the playoffs in the NBA, and it was because of the Pistons. And we have, and every other team has the Pistons to thank for what Jordan ended up becoming. But Jordan created that edge. You know, it had an edge to him, but he kind of took it to another level because of the Bad Boy Pistons that won titles and had that type of demeanor.
You want the guy that eats, breathes, and sleeps winning, that is obsessed with it. That's the kind of person you want.
Greg Esposito, Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today. We're going to switch gears, maybe a little pop culture to get into, you know?
Let's
change it up a little bit.
You know, Brad's not here. The kids are going to run in the asylum. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Maybe a little bit. You won't want to miss this. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Brad Sesmat Show, Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, Greg Esposito, Jared Cohen. My favorite tweet of the day before we get into the meat of our topic, just really quickly.
I see what you did there.
What did I say?
You said the meat.
The meat. Oh, yeah. The meat of the... Yeah, we'll get into that.
I didn't even catch that I did that.
You'll like this. Trump swears his hair is real, has audience member pull it. Now that is must-see video. I don't know about you.
Before we get into it, the travel budget on this show is amazing because we've been at
University
of Arizona Stadium.
Now all of a sudden it's evening time in Tempe. It's
impressive.
It's glorious. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today. So two major companies tried, well, one at least, wanted to play nice with the other and had a brilliant idea, and it kind of backfired. But let's give you a little synopsis of why the McWhopper is trending nationally.
So, Burger King's proposing a Burger Wars ceasefire to join forces with McDonald's on Peace Day and create the McWhopper. That's a big burger with big ambitions. A fair amount to swallow, right? So here's a little how, where, and why to help you digest our proposal. As two of the world's largest brands, we're in the perfect position to influence change. And like BK, McDonald's is committed to leveraging its size, scope, and resources to help make the world a better place. Peace One Day campaigns tirelessly for a better world. But they need our help raising awareness of Peace Day. We could rattle a bucket, but buckets aren't loud. Proposals like McWhopper make noise. Just ask this guy.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gibbs.
So the McWhopper.
I love this.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
Well, it's brilliant for a few reasons. A, it gets National Peace Day out there, but it also is brilliant marketing for Burger King because this is a win-win. They make the proposal. They know that McDonald's is likely going to say no, but they also know it's going to go viral like this. They look like the good guys. They make McDonald's look like the bad guys. And even if McDonald's said yes, it becomes an even bigger story, and there's nothing that's lost in it because it's all for charity. It is the perfect kind of marketing scheme. I love it. I think it was brilliant, and I just wish McDonald's had played along with it because it would have made that day something truly spectacular.
So they didn't play along with it. Eric has the details of why McDonald's decided not to play along with it.
Yeah, Jared, McDonald's decided to respond via Facebook. This is Steve McDonald, McDonald's CEO, probably.
It's actually the guy's name's McDonald.
Is that just a coincidence, or is there something
to that? It says. I don't know. Dear Burger King, inspiration for a good cause. Great idea. We love the intention, but think our brands could do something bigger and make a difference. We commit to raise awareness worldwide. Perhaps you'll join us in a meaningful global effort. And every day, let's acknowledge that between us, there is simply a friendly business competition, and certainly not the unequaled circumstances of the real pain and suffering of war. We'll be in touch.
And then
Steve said, P.S., a simple phone call will do next time. So of McDonald's completely poo-pooing the idea.
Did Jim King, middle name Burger, respond to this? The guy's name's McDonald. I want to throw a proposal out here.
Let's hear it.
We've got the power of the Brad.
We've got a national platform here.
The worldwide
platform.
The state's listening, though. And we know the powers that be at the local universities listen to this show. We know Brad's got their ear. And since we're here, I'm going to abuse that power today.
Do it.
And I'm going to throw down the gauntlet. I want to see the Sun Cats on World Peace Day. I want to see the University of Arizona State Sun Cats. Let's put aside our differences. I'm a U of A alumni. Sun Devils, I'm reaching out across the aisle.
Wild Devils?
Either way, I don't care. That sounds like a place that you'd see on Mill Avenue. I don't know. But I want to reach out to you and say to you, let's put aside our differences for one day. Let's give peace a chance and let Tucson and Tempe become one. I don't know how to combine those two for one name. Tuckpee? I don't know. However you want to call it. But let's combine the two cities and our powers and show that we can
like
be some...
a medical issue.
Goes with the Herbies from earlier.
We've come full circle.
Let's put aside our differences and make something beautiful for one day. We don't have to compete on a field that day or in a classroom or in marketing. Let's be one.
It doesn't matter whose girls are better looking on campus.
And you know what? We can all still give a hard time to the Lumberjacks if we want. let's band together for one day. Sun Cats, let's make it happen.
The Sun Cats for world peace.
I think I've abused the power of the Brad Sessmatt Show plenty, and I want to see this. Let's get Sun Cats trending. The five friends of mine that are watching on social media right now, let's get Sun Cats trending. At ASU, at Greg Byrne, all of you, let's put aside our differences. Let's make the Sun Cats happen.
Mic drop. Greg Esposito.
It was a pleasure, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
Well, we'll do it again in a year. That seems to be our schedule.
Our yearly get-together.
Or the next time Brad's got to take his kids somewhere or something, and we'll get to do it.
We'll do it. Special thanks to Lincoln Kennedy for joining us on the show leading up to the Cardinals and Raiders. You can catch this whole show again. Podcast will be up in just a little bit. Greg Esposito, Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.